Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 84 of Plebchain Radio. Today is Friday, the 25th of October, and it is 6:05 p.m. on the east coast of the United States at the time of recording. We have a special show ahead of you. Our guest is Ben Justman of Peony Lane Vineyard, and also happens to be a Creed and Pocket Stake enjoyer. So we'll look forward to that conversation. And just a reminder, if you are listening to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, first of all, what are you doing listening to a podcast? Go outside and touch some grass. Live your life. There are enough Bitcoin podcasts out there. You do not need to listen to another one. Live your life. Spend some time with your family. Take your kids to the playground. Have a romantic evening with your significant other. No, I'm just kidding.
Sun your balls listening at the playground, Avi.
That too. That too. thank you for listening. But I do urge you to switch over to the Fountain podcasting app, where you can earn some sats and support the value for value revolution as you listen. And the show is recorded live on NostrNess and streamed live on zap.stream. On NostrNess especially, there is a live chat that accompanies the audio portion of the show, and that can get pretty lively. And for our meme readout, QW.
Avi, that was an extended intro. I like it.
Gotta
you
mix
hit on
up.
All cylinders there.
Yeah, got to mix things up every now and then. For our meme readout, QW, do you know Hide the Pain Harold?
I do. He's one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite characters out there. And he's one of the few that we follow as a meme community. And I think he's accepted his fate as being Harold, Hide the Pain Harold, in real life.
Indeed. And for those of you unfamiliar, Hide the Pain Harold is a stock model, a very distinguished looking elderly, middle-aged, whatever, gentleman with a silver beard and with a smile that somehow has this unfathomable sorrow or existential angst behind it. But he's become quite a meme sensation. So this is a two-frame Hide the Pain Harold meme. The first frame, he's looking at his computer with a grin as he's holding a mug of coffee, and he says, "Just paid my taxes." On the second frame, he's looking at you with that unfathomable, sorrow-backed smile. And he says, "The roads should be fixed any day now." And QW, I know that wasn't a particularly topical meme, but I was, I've had a busy week and I had to find something.
Oh, man, my week was trying. It was my brain is still spinning, so I'm here. We're here, right?
We are here, and for our culture. And speaking of busy weeks, QW, I have been traveling a little bit. I was in Washington D.C. for the last couple of days on some fiat work, and happened to stumble into something that's relevant for our culture corner. It so happened on the day I was there. There is a Bitcoin book club. I believe it's called the District Book Club. And I showed up there, and it was a really nice evening with about 10 or 12 Nostriches and Bitcoiners. And they were reading The Sovereign Individual and having a really nice conversation about it.
So, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, QW, I just have to small brag here. They had a bunch of Bitcoin books laid out in front of them, even though the book of the day was The Sovereign Individual. It turned out mine was one of them, 24.
So that was nice. Did you sign it?
I did not have the chance to sign it. It was a fast-moving occasion. I wanted to, though.
Yeah. How about that, huh? How does that make you feel, honestly?
No, it's good, man.
It's surreal, right?
It is surreal. But the culture is permeating, Kidabi. Is a story about Bitcoin. And it was at a book club.
A purple book, too. Don't forget that, Abby.
Purple and orange.
Yeah.
Purple and orange. And then the other thing I saw in my travels, I happened to be in New York City. Got back here from D.C. yesterday and spending the next couple of days here. I was at PubKey's second anniversary celebration last night, and that was a really, really nice collection of Bitcoiners and Nostriches, some Nostriches too. Our friend of the show, The Daniel, was of course there, and several others. So nice little culture roundup from my side. What have you been saying, KW?
Short of learning about hand, foot, mouth this week with my toddler, that was one of my big cultural things. But other than that, the TabConf is going on right now. It's going to be closing out with Hodlween. So shout out to Babes Who Bitcoin, who puts that together. They typically do it in North Carolina, I believe. So they actually kind of pulled the sly roundabout Noster way, where we link on to other conferences and just traveled to Atlanta to do it, which I think is smart. And more and more they're turning to a more Noster centric pleb deal. I think there's a live show going on tomorrow night too. So there's gonna be live music and I'm pretty sure Toonster's gonna be running that, or maybe Zap.stream, one of the two.
Well,
I should really know more, but again, it's been a week.
It has been a week. Well, love to see that, QW. These latch on events, right? Because they're not necessarily full conferences in themselves, but if you can latch on to an existing event or conference, you just double the experience.
Yeah, and you think Roger 9000 is going to be be at Hodlween this year?
I don't think so, KW. Not for lack of wanting to be there. I'll tell you that.
Remember that show where it was Hodlween, I believe, is where he first got flagged. And
yes.
Then the second one was in a Pacific Bitcoin, and that was when he got deported. Man, what a story! Anybody want to hear that? Listen to the Roger 9000, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Roger 9000 episode of PCR. That was an amazing story.
Yeah, quite the story. And for our sermon today, KW, we're talking about the difference between businesses that accept Bitcoin versus Bitcoin businesses. So let me ask you this. Which of the two do you think drives more adoption?
I would have to ask what kind of adoption, yeah. Right? You know, the whole unit of exchange versus store of value, normal driving the culture, is MicroStrategy a Bitcoin business, Avi, or is it just a holder?
It is certainly not a business that accepts Bitcoin. I would say it's I'm not sure, QW, but I don't think the medium of exchange is a use case that they're particularly keen on.
Right, right. So, and that's kind of what I'm thinking as far as, you know, what can plebs do to drive adoption? I think accepting Bitcoin is the low hanging fruit, the easiest thing we can do to shift the Overton window, right?
Yes, for sure. Right. I personally think merchant adoption is one of the most important drivers of broader adoption. But is there a chicken and egg problem? And what I mean by that is, if you go to a merchant and say, hey, why don't you accept Bitcoin? They're going to say, well, I don't see the demand for it. Right. And then but maybe there's no demand for it because there aren't enough businesses that accept Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. The more you just kind of have an ego death, or you don't weigh your the success of how many people are purchasing it, but just having that sticker at least that says we accept Bitcoin here, you know, the more people that do that, the more normal people will be like, well, what's this Bitcoin thing type of thing, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So we need more merchants like Ben Justman. He's leading the charge on merchant adoption.
Well, and you know what? The thing is with Bitcoin businesses, and I've seen it, I don't even know what that means anymore. You know, they come and go, it seems. It's almost like sometimes they're just leveraging the Bitcoin portion to gain popularity. There's a few that are strong, and you know, but it just comes down to what's the easiest thing plebs like us can do. And it might be small, but doing the, you know, accepting Bitcoin over the globe is a huge thing. And as you know, obviously there's areas that are a lot harder, but you know, like with Bitcoin Jungle, Madeira, you know, Bitcoin Island, wherever, it's starting to actually be a thing. And in that case, I think accepting Bitcoin is much stronger than Bitcoin businesses, especially in those areas that are using it the most, right?
Absolutely, KW. I think, look, apparently this has become a controversial thing to say, or at least it's there. People are split in their views on this, on the medium of exchange front. But it, for me, it's very simple. This revolution is only successful if Bitcoin is used not just as a store of value, but as a medium of exchange. And what the medium of exchange is driven by merchant adoption, which is going to bring in user adoption.
Precisely.
And with that,
I agree, sir. I agree. And I haven't even really looked at the details, but I noticed that Microsoft is voting on whether they're going to hold Bitcoin. It's like, that just doesn't get me excited at all. I don't know. That's that whole team store value is exciting, obviously. Saving in Bitcoin, that's something I do. But the unit of exchange is really, to me, the most important thing. And I always just want to hammer that home.
What would excite me, KW, is if I could do a road trip through various different vineyards in the country, not just in the US, but through Europe, and pay for wine tastings with Bitcoin.
that's right up your alley, Avi, just like our guest. So let's, what do you say we introduce him?
Yes, Ben Justman, welcome to Plebchain Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Love the intro. Kind of got me thinking on some topics that I've been working on and just kind of in the midst of for a long time, as far as what provides the most value for using Bitcoin, spreading Bitcoin, and everything as a business. But happy to be on here with you guys, and excited to see where we go with this convo.
Well, we got to start with a burning question, Ben, and we'll get to the Bitcoin business conversation in a bit. Bitcoin business versus business that accepts Bitcoin, right? Okay, but the burning question is, when James Suckling rating for Peony Lane?
That's funny. I actually don't know who James Suckling is. And probably part of that is because I just haven't sought out any form of like conventional notoriety for my wine. Just, I don't know. I'm a little turned off by the wine industry and just find myself not leaning into that at all, even if it might be the right business decision. But, maybe after I Google him.
He's the JS guy. I don't know if you've seen the, you know, there's the RP JS. RP is Robert Parker. JS is James Suckling, and a few others. I think they have the WS rating, Wine Spectator, WA Wine Enthusiast. I don't know if you've seen those on when you shop for wine online. Those things tend to pop up. But no, I've had the Tempranillo and the Cabernet Franc from Peony Lane. Loved both of them. Was just curious to see if one of the fiat wine industry is taking any interest.
So I'm familiar with Robert Parker and obviously Wine Spectator and stuff. And I think the industry is a little bit different than like the ski industry that I was familiar with before I got into wine, but just learning about the ski industry and how everything, like all their top 10 goggles of the year, everything's just bought and paid for as far as like the position on the rankings. And it's a little bit different. I think I give the wine industry a little bit more credit than that. However, it's just like, it's not something I want to like wade into, I guess. And so in the way that I'm thinking about building my business is for longevity, kind of with the mindset that if I'm right about Bitcoin, I'm going to want to be doing this business, not for the money, because chances are all of us might not need more money in the future. So I want to do something that is more aligned with just what makes me happy to do every day. Leaning into that side of the wine industry is really painful and just cringe for me. So it's something I honestly, I've submitted to, you know, some wine contests and stuff, but I'm kind of just leaning out from that and trying to go, you know, you need social proof. You need people to understand that your wine's actually good, but I'm not looking to build a winery that's like massive and reliant on these specific, you could say, fiat opinion havers to make my business go good.
I love that, by the way, Ben, that you, so we had a couple of
would you expect
already.
Anything less, Avi? I mean, yeah. That's from a pleb.
I wouldn't, but remember we've had guys like Saul Snowd on the show, and they've already sort of managed to extricate themselves from the tentacles of fiat world, and they're living the lives that they want to live. I think Ben is getting there, it sounds like, from what he said, right? Because he mentioned this as essentially as the bet on Bitcoin, which we're all betting on, but he's already living that life because he's doing what he loves already. Not worrying about the fiat cycle of having to pump up ratings and all the marketing and all the nonsense that goes into the wine industry.
Yeah. And there's ways that like I'll grow the business that'll probably step into that a little bit, but it's kind of just wanting to build something that is a lot more self-reliant. And so focusing on my own, like marketing direct to people and building up kind of social media presence and awareness that way, as opposed to the conventional way of building businesses, but specifically wineries. And part of that's just like me keeping things small and not having Bitcoin as like, hey, I made wine, I'm saving my money in this, and that realistically should be enough for me. Long-term savings wise, and then day to day it's, you know, make whatever money I can to build, to support my life and grow my business to the point where it naturally needs to be where I enjoy it the most. And I think the freedom that it's given me is I don't, in wineries there's kind of this void where you can either be below 4,000 cases of production a year and be profitable, or above 40,000. Those numbers are, you know, not as hardline as that says, but there's this middle ground where medium-sized wineries don't exist. You can be small, boutique, have dedicated clientele and survive well, and you can be big and survive and make money. And I'm, in the way that I think about things, is like, I don't need to continuously grow to the point where I'm looking at crossing that chasm. I can just stay my size, be consistent, and not like have inflation eat away at everything I'm producing, because I save my money in a hard thing. So I can, it gives me the freedom to build a business that I enjoy building, making high quality wine, and not continuously focusing on expanding, just focusing on quality and doing what I do well.
And what is the reason for that chasm between 4,000 and 40,000?
There's, it's probably more complicated than I can give it credence for, but there's a certain economies of scale that just get much more manageable at the higher volume. When you do, so I do all direct consumer, and all the time, you know, I have people asking me if I can, if they, like, if my wine is in any stores around them or what restaurants my wine's in. And I've just stayed away from that completely because the margin, the profit margin is so much smaller. And so you just kind of get eaten alive as a winery trying to do wholesale. So sell in liquor stores, grocery stores, and restaurants. And you end up having to produce so much more. So smaller wineries have a little bit more of a chance to sell a higher percentage of their product as or themselves is probably a big part of it.
So the rise to plebhood, Ben, tell me about your backstory.
Yeah. So, was born in Austin. I don't know how far back you want to go, but basically when I was a kid, we moved to a farm from Austin, Texas, and my dad wanted to grow all his own food and, ended up planting grapes and, started making wine. And I kind of just was thrown into living in a town with a ranching and coal mining and farming town. That was a pretty big shift, and just grew up on the farm, having to work on the farm as a kid. And when I went off to college, I had never thought, or I thought I'd move back home, but not till I was like 40, married with kids or something. And after doing some traveling and working as a geologist and kind of, which is my degree, and kind of realizing that that wasn't going to be the path for me, I was started looking for a business to start, and kind of had started a few side hustles that weren't going anywhere, and was looking for something super committing, just kind of to push myself and force myself to do it. And so was just on the phone with my dad one night and talked about the economics of winemaking, and kind of knowing that he had made some wine like without any training that was having sommeliers stop in their tracks and be like, wait, what's this? And so I figured, you know, if my dad could figure it out, I could figure it out too. And so figured he would teach me. He had all the infrastructure to at least get me started. I'd have to scale up quite a bit, but I could at least get going and figure out how to do it along the way. And so I kind of just said, screw it. And invested my life savings and made wine, and then borrowed more money a year later and made wine. And then after I had invested my life savings 3x over, I found what was able to find out whether my wine was good or not, because I had to wait a year and a half or so before I made any sales. And so right a little bit after I started the winery, I moved back home to build a house with my dad, which was what he did his whole life. And I moved in with a guy I went to high school with, who one of my good high school buddies, but I considered him like the smartest person I knew. And we would always talk politics, geopolitics, economics, macro, just like stuff I'm generally interested in. I think a lot of Bitcoiners are. And it turns out he was a Bitcoiner. So he just kept pushing, just kept saying like all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, all you have are hedges. Like, you're invested in Bitcoin and precious metals. Like, all you have are hedges in case shit hits the fan. And he just kind of kept pushing me to study. And my turning point was like, oh, they're not hedges. Shit is hitting the fan, or is definitely going to. Like, these are sureties. Like, everything you're betting on happening is just going to happen. It's math. And so that kind of got me continued down the rabbit hole, listening to the Sailor series, and just kind of while I was building a house, while I was starting this really low time preference business, going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, all these three like major life-changing things happened all at once. And so I bought the top, and then I bought the bottom, and then I bought the top, and then I bought the whole way down. And it was a dark bear market, but Bitcoiners started finding my wine and loving it and buying it with Bitcoin and everything else. And that's, I don't know if
I mean, I probably would have stuck with Bitcoin because I had some conviction, but like just kind of having the community and the support for my business and everything made the bear market, even if it in its dark days for a first bear market participant who bought the top heavily both times, made that a lot better. So
are you above water yet, Ben?
Hopefully. I don't do that math.
The boating accident tells me it's below water.
That's true. So did you have any specific wines or winemakers that inspired you?
No, I mean, I really didn't know anything about wine when I got going. My dad made wine and I figured he'd teach me. And as soon as I started doing it, I said, oh crap, I don't think my dad knows what he's doing. And so just around the area, my town has 10 or 15 wineries, the highest elevation wine region in North America. And after the success of my family's vineyard and one or two others, everyone's planting Pinot Noir. So there's a lot of, just to say it's a small town, and I get this vibe with Bitcoiners that the pie isn't big enough to worry about splitting up. Like, let's just build each other up and grow the pie. And I get that with the wineries here too, where everyone realizes that their success also depends or is benefited by the success of others. And so everyone's super helpful. Very much just wanting to build, even outside of my specific region, Colorado wine as a thing. And so I'm kind of doing something very different than everyone else as far as what I'm trying to build. No one else is. I've had people say, oh, that's smart, buying, you know, investing with your proceeds as far as Bitcoin goes, but no one really understands it. And I don't know, there's a lot of people to learn from, but no one specific that I was like targeting with my winemaking approach. And part of that's making natural wine is really just wanting to let the grapes do their own thing and be as low intervention as possible. So, I mean, I learned techniques from people, but I'd specifically like a lot of times they'll be like, oh, add this chemical. And it's just, sorry, I'm not going to do that. So there's a bit of kind of just knowing that my dad was able to figure it out and make really good wine without knowing anything and having much less attention to detail than I do. And so I kind of having faith just that it's going to work out. And that was really scary the first few years when I'd never made wine before. And I had some definitively go bad because I didn't know what I was doing. But now that I'm 5 years in, I think the wine's really good.
And is Colorado a challenging place to grow? I mean, there's a lot of different elevations in Colorado, right? And from my understanding, vineyards need to be at a certain elevation or there's a sweet spot for it, correct?
So there's pluses and minuses to everywhere, and there's limiting factors everywhere. One of the biggest limiting factors for like size of the Colorado wine industry is the size of land that actually would grow good grapes. So most of the grapes are grown in the Grand Valley AVA, which is like 4,000 feet high. It's Colorado River near Grand Junction, hotter, more desert than where I am. And then I'm in this like tiny little valley that's known for organic food. And what we have specifically going for us is we can grow Pinot Noir, and Palisade Grand Valley AVA cannot. So they produce most of the wine, but we produce different wines at about 2,000 feet higher elevation. And the benefit of growing grapes in Colorado is that the cold winters and the dry climate basically mean we don't ever even think about needing to use pesticides or herbicides. So that's a huge benefit. Downside is every few years we get like a really cold snap and it kills all the grapes above ground. So like they come back, but it takes a year for them to build, like to grow up from the root stock. And then the next year we get a crop. So every once in a while we freeze everything above ground and we lose everything for a year. That said, you can kind of just make more wine the other years to paper over that. That happened my third year of winemaking. We didn't get any grapes. Unfortunately, I didn't have any time to build a back stock. So that was a bummer. But the other limiting factor is you have a shorter season, colder weather, all that stuff basically just means you have a limited amount of vine or of grape varieties that you can actually grow. But what does grow here grows insanely well. And as I say all the time, it's the highest elevation Pinot Noir in North America, which makes it pretty unique. You get these higher acidity, brighter fruit in high altitude wines. And so me being here is pretty unique.
I was that was going to be my
name. Rare, next. Bobby. That sounds
yeah, it certainly does. Well, you know, Ben, that was going to be my next question. That the growing season must be a lot shorter given the elevation and the cold. So presumably, you can't be growing things like Sangiovese or, you know, maybe even Cabernet Sauvignon might be a challenge, right? With a shorter growing season. So what are the varietals that are most suited to the soil and climate?
So there's a ton of research being done by the University of Minnesota basically to create GMO vines to that have ripening characteristics that you need anywhere, specifically in the Midwest where it gets super cold. So there's a ton of those varieties that will grow well here. I've basically maybe had one wine that I liked from those varieties. So let's count those out. There's a bunch that we don't know because it takes 5 years to establish a vineyard, and that's a huge investment. And then another couple of years if it's red wine to know if it's any good. So it's really hard to find new varieties that grow well here. What's proven itself is Pinot Noir as the only red, Chardonnay, Gewürztraminer, and Riesling. So cold weather varieties. And kind of everyone's on the lookout for what else can be grown here. There's some theories, but ultimately those are the ones that are proving themselves. And everyone seems to be planting Pinot Noir right now. So
now you do have the Tempranillo and the Cabernet Franc as well, right? Which I've tried. What are your thoughts on how those grow versus the Pinot Noir itself?
So I'm exclusively growing the Pinot Noir myself and then bringing in the rest of the varieties to create some variety in my lineup. Ultimately, I may end up with the business just going full on Pinot Noir, doing a red Pinot and a rosé. But as it is, I can still make incredible wine from other people's grapes and make more wine that way and do it still naturally with a wild fermentation that I start from my grapes and not add anything. So it's a lot of the same, it's the same winemaking style. It's literally just not grapes that I grew myself.
Oh, interesting. So I wasn't aware of that. So where do you get your Tempranillo from? Where do you get the Cabernet Franc from?
So normally I am getting grapes from Palisades, so Grand Valley, about an hour and a half away from me. That's, like I said, the other main producer in Colorado. The 2021 vintage, which I believe you're referring to having tried, there were no grapes in Colorado. Everything got frozen out from a freak storm, a freak freeze. And there's nothing I could do but go to California and figure out where I could get some good grapes. So the entire 2021 vintage is from California. I brought them back just in a refrigerated truck. I had enough grapes from my vineyard to propagate a natural fermentation and then was able to make wine in the same way I make wine always. But unfortunately, it was just one of those years where there were no grapes in Colorado. And so what I've done to hedge my bets against that is just produce a ton of wine after that, so that if there's ever another year where there's no grapes in Colorado, I just maybe don't make wine that year and fill it in with larger production from other years. But that being my third year, me having no stock, no production stock, I kind of had no choice. And that's just kind of the it was a lot of shocks, a lot of harsh realities learned in 2021 with Bitcoin crashes and no grapes being around to buy. Yeah, a lot of good lessons learned that year.
I feel like I've been rugged here, Ben. I'm kidding, but you had to do what you had to do. It was a rough year. So for plebs who are interested but unaware, could you walk us through what happens in a typical growing season from the beginning to the harvest time?
The grapes are the last thing around here to start growing for the spring. And that's great because there are spring frosts that come through, and all the fruit farmers tend to grow multitude of both varieties and types of fruit, because that way if they lose one, they're protected, and you're pretty much guaranteed to lose some fruit to spring frost every year, except for the grapes. So assuming there was no hard frost and we have a good growing year, things start really happening in May, and then they just go all the way through to, I would say, late August. The grapes start turning purple. That's called veraison. And so they've just been green the whole time. That's like their final ripening stage is veraison. And then for about a month later, month and a half later, we pick. So this year we picked the earliest we've ever picked since I've been involved in late September. Usually it's like the first or second weekend in October. And we're like, okay, it's going to freeze tomorrow. We have to pick. This is as ripe as we're going to get. So this 2024 vintage, we were able to get to the ripening we wanted much earlier than we wanted. And it seems like everyone in the area was picking before normal. We just had a warm summer that ripened things quicker. So it's looking like a good year this year. And once we pick the grapes, I put them through a machine called a crusher and destemmer. Everyone asks me if I stomp the grapes and then is like super disappointed when I tell them, no, we have a machine that does it better and more efficiently and cleaner. And once the stems are separated and the grapes are crushed, we have like basically the macerated skins, some full berries and juice in an open vat. And that ferments for 2 weeks. So if it's the Pinot Noir, don't add anything and it just ferments. But if it's any other grape, what I've done is I've started a fermentation for the Pinot Noir in that facility a week or two before to get those yeast cells everywhere. And then those yeast cells just move over to the new grapes and start that fermentation. So that way, it's still the yeast from my vineyard that's fermenting everything. And the reason that's important is not for specifically health reasons or anything. It's just, it makes wine differently. Different yeast creates different flavors. I want the wine to taste like it's from my vineyard, even if it's not. So that's the best thing I can do. So it ferments for 2 weeks, and then I press it into barrels once it's done. And then that's pretty much where it's going to stay for the next year. These barrels breathe, and so every month I go in and top them off with wine. So I add about a bottle or two of wine a month. And then after a year in the barrel, I bottle them and then try and hold on to the bottle for 6 months to a year, if not a little bit more, because it just keeps getting better, and then sell it. And the reason I wait so long to sell it is kind of like, if all I have to do to make my product better, to make the experience with someone else enjoying it better, is wait, I'm going to do that. Because if just knowing kind of how people interact with the wine industry, if you buy a bottle of wine, especially if you pay a decent amount of money for a bottle of wine and you don't like it, you are never going to buy that again. And you're going to feel tricked and duped, and just like, it's a bummer when you open a bottle of wine and you don't like it. So I'm just as patient as I can be. I'm not in a rush to move wine, and just want to make sure that every person that enjoys my wine or that has my wine enjoys it as much as possible. And if that just kind of puts me in, I'm not in a rush to move it all. Like I you know, I'm moving it, creating cash flow, but ultimately I'm very comfortable with the aging process being 2 years, especially now that I've caught up to that and all the new wine I release is at that age.
Well, some say that winemaking is a low time preference profession.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin's like way higher time preference than winemaking in a lot of ways.
You know, Avi, you and Derek, both Derek Ross in the audience, you guys both purchased some Peony, correct?
Yes, indeed.
There were rumors that it was a limited run where Ben Justman actually crushed those grapes with his feet in between his toes. And there was the Footster collection. So how did his feet taste, Avi?
Well, I will tell you, the only personalization I noticed, and I genuinely appreciate this, Ben, was that you had a handwritten note for me on the package. So thank you for that.
Of course. you just gave me a great idea to do a Footster collection.
Exactly.
Because I did, for the 2024 Pinot, smash them with my feet for the first time as an experiment. So
a limited
run. We'll do a Footster limited run right there. We'll see how big the Footster community is before I do anything.
Speaking of the Footster community, you know, a lot of them are Bitcoiners. And do you get Bitcoiners on wine tasting road trips? Is it part of what you see out there?
Yes, but I don't have that's not my business model. Is I don't have a tasting room that I'm looking to do tastings. What I've done is like kind of a bootstrap mechanism is farmers markets and going to like Aspen and Telluride, which are two ski resorts near me that just, you know, higher end vacation clientele. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't found that that's built a ton of brand. So basically I'm looking to be done with that and moving forward, just sell wine online, mostly to Bitcoiners. And at those farmers markets, about once a week, someone comes up and is like, either knows me or is psyched about the Bitcoin and buys with Bitcoin, which is really cool. And has been ultimately the way I've been stacking for the last year or two exclusively. And that's always super rewarding because like you go from selling to this like just super depressing to talk to full of Botox cougar in Aspen to a pleb who's just like so psyched to buy wine with Bitcoin. So it's like, it's super uplifting and it's just been very clarifying. It's like, yeah, I think this is where I want the business to go, not the conventional wine route, because the difference is so stark.
Yeah. And you're turning your proof of work into savings with proof of work. It's something to be said there. It's beautiful. It's poetic.
Yeah. I did the math a few weeks ago, Jack, not Twitter Jack, Strike Jack was talking about
Mahlers
was talking about like how investing within the company, like you have to outpace the compound annual growth rate of Bitcoin, saying it's like, let's say 50%. And I did the math and I outperform Bitcoin's CAGR if I sell the wine in 2 years. And so I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes they age wine longer. So it's kind of a, like Bitcoin's almost raising my time preference where I could like hold on to wine longer and it increases in value. It's older, it's better, but it's going to buy me less Bitcoin. And so I'm incentivized to sell the wine quicker due to Bitcoin, than I would be
Once you get into that Bitcoin math and cycles and everything, yeah.
I'm trying not to live my life.
How's your
like
trade
that.
Going, bro?
Glad
yeah,
you're
no,
not now.
It's, you got to stay humble and sell wine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not like, ultimately, it's just like, hey, I'm going to make this long term bet, build the life and the business I want to do. Mm-hmm. If I ever want to do something else, great. Bitcoin hopefully gives me that freedom to at least have. You know, it's the early, what is it? It's the first mover advantage that actually lasts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, if I can at this point, like make wine and sell it for Bitcoin, I'm happy. I'm not pinching pennies to
right.
make sure I get in all these sales like before Bitcoin goes up a ton, is just sell what I can. And ultimately, when Bitcoin goes up, a lot of Bitcoiners start buying more wine. They feel rich. They buy wine. They want to celebrate. You know, why not?
Yeah. And as it normalizes as a unit of exchange, yeah, too, it just more and more customers, I suppose.
Yeah, it's kind of funny though. Like, it's the days where Bitcoin crashes, it's like, well, I'm not going to make any sales today. Everyone's spent all their money on Bitcoin. And the days where Bitcoin goes up, it's like, well, sales are good, but I'm getting less Bitcoin. So it's just kind of it's a funny balance. But I know in the long run, it's going to be fine. And it's me betting on Bitcoin. It's betting on Bitcoiners and betting on people who want to kind of reconnect with the land and learn how to learn that they can drink something without feeling bad, as opposed to most of the stuff they drink that gives you bad hangovers and just leaves you feeling like crap.
Yeah, you mentioned the swing in price, but what other challenges do you face with selling wine for Bitcoin?
So the biggest thing is really just like infrastructure wise. As a small winery, I don't have all my own software to and all my own liquor licenses, so I'm depending on a third party to facilitate sales in states outside of mine. So I don't have to get, it would be impossible, like not financially reasonable or time reasonable for me to get 50 or even 30 liquor licenses, one for every state. So I use a third party for that, and it basically allows me to kind of plug and play, but I'm kind of their bitch. And in a lot of ways, as far as like just having to do things their way. And one of those things is they are not going to accept Bitcoin. Because technically, when you buy on my site, you're buying from them, and I'm just a fulfillment. I'm just fulfilling it. Mm-hmm. So that's frustrating. But what I've done is just, I've done like P2P sales where I just like input cash into that system that they have, and people pay me in Bitcoin. And that was like the first 3 years of accepting Bitcoin was people just DMing me and me making it happen, which isn't scalable. And now it's still not ideal. But what I've done is I've just kind of made like one of the best deals on my sites is a Zaprite payment link that you just get this specific Bitcoin box. And that makes life easy, makes it so like when people go to my site and they're like, dude, what the hell? I can't buy wine with Bitcoin. I'm like, listen, you can. It's just hard. And I don't have to explain why I'm bent over a barrel by this third party all the time. So it's kind of just frustrating in that sense. It's like, I am the only winery, at least that's using this platform, that's like, hey, people want to buy with Bitcoin. Please let me implement this. Like all the Bitcoin payment processor companies are like, hey, like, we'll help these people like integrate this. It's not that hard, but they're just like, you know, they don't get it. They're not gonna adopt it. And so, and Luddites. I'm the only one asking for it, and I'm a small winery in the grand scheme of things. So like, what can I do? But I'm just kind of keep doing my thing.
You reminded me of, I went to Merkin Wines in Jerome here. I live in Phoenix. So that's Maynard from Tool, his winery. And I picked up a bottle of wine, and I sent it to Doc, our buddy at Nostra Report, Doc. And I went to the UPS store and I went to ship it. And they're like, what's in here? I'm like, wine. They're like, no, don't say that. Because I guess you can't just ship alcohol. A normal pleb just can't send it. He changed the name. He like warned me. He told me, you know, he said it's something else he wrote on there. Like, I don't know. They have other liquid stuff that they commonly ship. So, but it was the first time I was like, geez, I can't even freaking send a bottle of wine to a buddy via UPS.
Yeah. Yeah. It's frustrating. The third party I use does take care of all the UPS headache for me. So that's really nice. But yeah, I think that's a big thing, a big hurdle to educate people. I mean, a lot of people, why would I buy wine online when I can go to the liquor store or whatever and have a good selection? You have to have a specific brand that you want. And so one of my biggest struggles was like, people would go onto my site and they'd be like, hey, why is, I'm looking to buy a bottle, but shipping's the exact same price as the bottle. Like, why, this is, I can't justify this. And wine is heavy and it's fragile and it's temperature sensitive. So it's like all the bad things for shipping. And But the thing is it doesn't scale linearly with quantity. So if you ship one bottle, it's like $30 around the country. But if you ship six bottles, it's like $40. So it's not crazy. So I've just kind of had to play with the marketing, and I've made it so it's a three bottle minimum. So no one actually hits that point of like, oh, well, that's a ridiculous shipping price. I'm just going to write these people off because I don't understand wine shipping, which I don't expect people to. So it's kind of, yeah, it's just playing with kind of expectations, where you want to send people, goals for people, as far as like, I've got it so six bottles ship free. So you kind of have a goal to get to with bottles. Cause if you're going to buy wine, especially nicer wine that like you're going to save for nicer events, a lot of times it's like, hey, just buy a decent amount, get the free shipping and hold on to it for years. It's going to stay good. If you can just like keep it in the back of your closet. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Obstacles. You got to have that purpose to drive you, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's just business. Everyone's got that. Just wine is kind of a unique thing.
And thinking of purpose and culture, what's your thoughts on culture driving adoption? So culture being upstream of adoption, and is wine part of that culture?
Wine, what I'm doing with wine, natural wine, low intervention wine, is part of, it's connected me to a lot of people in the like regenerative health, regenerative ag, just like based living side of the world. And all those people seem to be finding Bitcoin, or a lot of them do, or their minds open to it. Don't trust the system. Why would I not trust the food system and then trust the financial system? And I think culture definitely does drive that, is once you kind of realize like self-reliance, decentralizing, your life in a lot of ways, like as far as where you get your food and how you live, and sometimes for a lot of people how you make your money with any sort of side hustles if you're not plugged into the 9-to-5. I think it opens the door into wanting to learn about Bitcoin, and we all know that like you're not just going to get Bitcoin. I mean, sure, some people it just clicks, but ultimately like it's going to be this rabbit hole you go down, and it might suck you down a little of the way, but like you got to be interested to even peek into that and have an open mind and some sort of not trust the system. So I think that there's a lot of kind of culture moments that are opening the door to people being curious about Bitcoin. And I think that health is one of the biggest ones, where people are kind of realizing that the health system, either the food, medical services, anything related in that is broken in the United States. And that's kind of, I think, opening the door to Bitcoin. It's, you know, it's second or third layer that they get into, and they maybe have to find a friend or find that extra touch point. But once that next touch point hits, they're much more likely to be open for it. So, me at farmers markets, I've always had my Bitcoin preferred here sign. And people ask me about it. I always say like, I prefer its monetary policy. And a lot of people are like, what does that mean? So there's a lot of people that have a long way to go, as we know, to understand Bitcoin. But I think if you have any sort of like other thing that you're curious about that is tangential in the form of not trusting the system, it drives you to be a lot more accepting of Bitcoin, in a way that like, if you just trust the system, you're just going to write off Bitcoin.
Yeah. Makes sense, Ben. So do you see any more Bitcoin wineries on the horizon? Any more Peony Lanes coming up?
Definitely. There's some winemakers on Twitter that I know, some on Noster. I think that I'm kind of just in a unique position where it's one natural wine that like connects with Bitcoiners a lot. And also it's just me. So I can be like, oh yeah, I'm going full on into Bitcoin. Whereas in most wineries, it's not just one person running everything. You have to convince a lot of people to be open to this and figure it out that way. So I imagine so. I mean, I'm not the first either. Like I had someone, first time I interacted with Will Reeves, the CEO of Fold, he was like, are you really the first? And he like just started Googling and he found some really cool things that like, one, when you Google Bitcoin Wine, I'm working on my SEO, but when you Google Bitcoin Wine, you get like this gold bottle that's just like, I don't know, it's done up, it looks cool. I've seen a lot of people post that they got it. It's a cool looking bottle, but then you click on their site and they got a Dogecoin, they got a Litecoin, they got all this stuff. And it says nothing about the wine. It's like literally just a branding mechanism to sell bottles, which, you know, I do as well, but the whole business is Bitcoin and I have a Bitcoin logo on every bottle. And then there's also this winery that these two guys, they were selling shares of their winery for, or like you had to make a minimum of an investment of $100,000 to get a percentage of the winery for Bitcoin in 2014. And so that winery doesn't exist anymore. Those guys are probably doing well, decided to get out of business and just do whatever they wanted with their lives. But just to say, like, I'm not the forefather of this. Like, I'm not the first winery. I won't be the last.
Knut Svanholm released something earlier this year. It was the Infinity 21 blend. I think it was a blend of red grapes from Spain, and I actually had the chance to try it. I think he was premiering it in Madeira at Bitcoin Atlantis. So I guess more and more. I don't know if he's going to continue doing that, or maybe that was just a one-time run of that wine. But yeah,
I don't know.
Love to see more of that happening.
I briefly talked to him about it in Miami a couple years ago, and he basically just contracted with a winery that he knew and bought like a certain, you know, a certain amount of wine, like let's say a barrel or two. I don't know how much it was, but let's just say a certain number of barrels, and was like, hey, I'll pay you for this wine if you bottle it and put this label on it. And I'm sure it was amazing wine. It was obviously does not make wine. So fun branding exercise and cool to see the demand. And also I can't sell in Europe, so like I'm rooting for him.
Right. So have you tried orange pilling any other winemakers?
It comes up because I meet all these other winemakers and they we just talk business, and I'm kind of in, like I said, a unique spot. But a lot of them are pretty deeply invested in the winery and trying to make that work, and don't really have time to, in their own perception, don't really have time to like learn about this thing that Ben's into, that they've heard whatever about. And there's some that are maybe curious, some that think it's cool, but like I think that they need to see a bull run happen and then maybe think of me, and then we can talk. Because ultimately, like, you really take the information from people that you like really know and respect in your field, and then whatever else you say, whatever else they say you grab onto. And I'm the upstart in this wine industry, and you know, I got in and started talking about it, and then basically my winery started like past the phase of like, hey, this isn't just going to flame out, this is going to work, while Bitcoin was in the bear market. And so I basically like just established myself and have recently had the conversations when Bitcoin was in the bear market, and they see what I'm doing, they see what I'm branding, but like they think it's cute at this point. And they need like a bull run to be like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have written him off about that, to come back and have a real conversation about it. Because I mean, ultimately, like, I recognize in the wine game, I'm new, they're much more established, they're much more experienced. And if they try my wine and love it, maybe they'll start, they build that respect and long-term, like, wanting to listen. But ultimately, it's just like I said, wine is such a long-term game that it's, I don't know, talking personal finance with people is difficult, but there are some people open-minded, and I think just through the next cycle, I'm going to start getting questions, because even at the all-time high, like, you know, I'd like two people, three people reach out, not that many people. It's really just not on people's radars right now. So once it gets back on people's radars, I imagine that I'll start having those conversations.
And do you see Noster playing a role in selling wine, short of the Footster limited run you're going to be doing?
Well, Footster has been an integral part of my business for a couple of years. No, I've one of my biggest things I'm really bummed about is that I can't call myself a class of 2021 Noster, because my buddy got me on Noster in January 2022, and
123-22, but who's or 123-23. There you go.
It's 2023. Okay, well, whatever. I'm pissed about the January part, because I'd love to save the extra year. Makes it seem way cooler. But in the end, I know it's early.
One day after my son was born.
Wow.
I'll always remember that.
Just here to celebrate you. I come in waves on Noster as far as usage. And I think I got my first sale, wine for sale in exchange for a Zap in like March that year. Yeah. So there's, I think Noster.
Those Sats are doing well too. That's a good conversion rate.
Yeah. I was really, really broke at that point. And it was hard to keep all the wine sales in Sats. But I did, and I'm very happy about it, that I made during that period of time. But I see Noster like becoming kind of getting people familiar with using Bitcoin mechanism, because a lot of the Bitcoin sales wine sales I've done for Bitcoin has been me coaching someone through their first Bitcoin transaction. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, obviously, but like a pretty high percentage of them. And that's awesome. But you need more and more people to have that experience where it's just like, oh, this is easy. Boom, done. Bought this with Bitcoin. Not a big deal. And like for me, it's just, I mean, I guess if I have like my credit card saved or something, it's easy. But ultimately, like buying something with Bitcoin is incredibly easy and self-explanatory once I've figured it out. And so once people kind of get used to it, I think that a lot of people will start using more Bitcoin for sales and recognizing that it is actually easier in some ways to make it happen. It's just kind of like, I was zapping and pro like buying things with Bitcoin and trying it out, because I was getting, people were buying my wine with Bitcoin. And like, if I'm not going to buy things with Bitcoin and I expect other people to buy my stuff with Bitcoin, like who am I? So I just say that to say, like, I think most people kind of need a cycle or two to feel like they are beyond the point where they can meaningfully stack and change their stack anymore, or at least feel somewhat close to that or above their price, what they bought at, to feel comfortable spending Bitcoin. And it's a bit of a mind flip. I mean, I recognize it is easier to, or it's maybe more financially reasonable to use a credit card and get, you know, 2% back and not pay any taxes on your Bitcoin gains in that way and just keep stacking. But I think that, like, if we're going to get people to use Bitcoin Bitcoiners better be using it in more than just a unit of account or savings tool. So I find it like super meaningfully important to spend Bitcoin and to teach people how to spend Bitcoin and to give people a reason to want to spend Bitcoin, because you better have a pretty awesome product or something that gets better with age to entice someone to actually spend their Bitcoin.
Yeah, Noster's really made it the ease of using Bitcoin. I mean, we say using, but every zap, every like, in lieu of like, you zap, we're throwing sats around like crazy. If I go to steak with Avi, I'm sitting at the table with him, I'll just throw him the sats. It's so easy. But how does that make it to the marketplace of, let's say, a winery?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the ease of the transacting and like not having to ask like, oh, what's your connection? Cause I can just, oh yeah, I follow this person, I can pay them. It's super easy. honestly, like, alcohol is, since there's so many regulations, like, I'm the slowest in adopt. Like, yeah. I want to be this guy who's like adopting all the cool new stuff, but like, I'm the slowest because of the regulations. Me being a one-man show, I'm not going to build my own infrastructure. So it's really just a matter of like orange pilling the people that matter. So like, yeah. there's people that are going to get orange pilled and just save money and not talk about it. Great. Happy for them. There's people that are going to orange pill, get orange pilled, and then tell everyone and maybe orange pill someone else. And then there's people who are going to orange pill, get orange pilled, and then build stuff. And those are the people that it really matters, that it affects. So like, I don't care necessarily if Microsoft buys Bitcoin and puts Bitcoin on their balance sheet, but if they buy Bitcoin and then start building stuff for Bitcoin, like, that's exciting.
Yeah. When we did our Culture Shock event here in Phoenix, my wife made some baked goods, and the easiest way to get to make transactions during that was just zapping her directly on her InPub. Right when, you know, I want one muffin, two cookies. It was the easiest shit in the world versus like, cool. Which wallet are you using? What's this? Oh, download this. But that was with a bunch of, nostriches and things. So it was neat though, to see it in real life where that was the easiest mechanism. It's cool. But that would be in person, kind of that local market setting, which, you know, obviously plays well for Bitcoiners. And how's your wine pair with let's say a ribeye?
So my Pinot Noir, which is like my flagship, what I consider my best wine, my most unique, because it's what I grow myself. That is probably, like, I've had it with steak plenty. If you got one bottle and you're looking to pair it with the best meal, you want one of my Cab Francs or one of my Cab Sauvs or Tempranillo or even Syrah. Like, I've got a bunch of bigger wines. So you want to go for one of the non-estate wines for a ribeye. And then if you're ever doing chicken, salmon, something a little bit lighter, that Pinot Noir is incredible. If you're trying to orange pill a friend, a couple glasses makes the orange pill go down a little smoother, and you're going to be happy.
And any specific blend pair well with Sunning Your Balls?
I have tested all of them with Sunning My Balls, and I gotta say, it's really just about the label. All the Bitcoin labels, just like, those work better.
One more burning question. How has the song Higher by Creed changed your life?
Oh man. Well,
where do you start?
So I was, I'll just say, like, the first thing that came to my mind is, Samson Mao started retweeting it a lot, and, just kind of cracked me up. Cause he had some good memes, and, I was I forced my girlfriend to sit down and watch a little bit of that Bitcoin documentary, that just came out where they figured out who Craig Wright was.
I watched it with my wife. Yeah. I got to teach her about a little bit about Bitcoin mining some more.
So yeah, my girlfriend is not, she has,
no,
yeah, I'm with you. She has no idea, but, I was like, yeah, that, see that guy, he likes Creed. And, so that was great. But ultimately, I don't know. It's just the Creed CD, Human Clay. I put it in my disk drive in my truck and the eject button doesn't work. So I've been listening to it for like the last 8 months, pretty consistently. And they have such a wholesome vibe. Like the everything they talk about is just like so uplifting and wholesome. And so that's been a positive benefit to my life. But also it lets me know who the haters are. You know, there's a lot of people that are pretty strong anti-Creed. And I remember that.
Yeah, I think it's just ultimately an ode to the meme culture, the fun. I mean, we have to Absolutely. Have fun with our cycles, with our psychopaths, and just keeping the culture the heartbeat pounding, you know.
Plus, like, look, The first Bitcoin wine I ever released was Satoshi's Reserve. That was the best barrel of my 2021 vintage. And I got to put Pairs Well with Arms Wide Open on the back of the bottle. And then coming up, as soon as we hit an all-time high price, I am releasing my next Bitcoin-themed wine that is a blend of Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, and Merlot that is called Higher. So, yeah, I guess it's
wow.
It's inspired me a lot of ways, but it's kind of it's been fun.
This might be the first JS rating, Avi. To circle
and
back.
It will be higher. It will be higher than the last one.
Yeah, the price is higher in Bitcoin.
So Ben, anything else you want to plug? Other than your wine?
Probably just would love to keep chatting with people on Noster. And if there's anything anyone wants to learn about wine, just any perspective I can share, I'm sure you're not the only one on that topic. So shoot me a DM or just comment on anything and kind of let me know what you're curious about, because I'm just finishing up winemaking season where my life is dictated by the flow and fermentation of grapes, and looking to spend the winter doing a lot of writing and education. So curious what people are wanting to learn about and how I can provide help or information or guidance or anything, perspective. And just appreciate you guys having me on in this great conversation, and cheers to you both.
And I have to, what part of Colorado, if I'm looking at the state?
So it is, the town's called Paonia, and it is kind of like right in the middle as far as north south. And if you divide the state into thirds, we are right on the crease of the left fold of the third fold, if that makes sense. It's like I said, a small mountain town, 2,000 people, and traditionally coal mining and agriculture, and the coal mines are kind of shutting down, thanks Obama, and it's kind of in this transitionary period where the wineries are the big agritourism thing right now. Colorado wine is kind of beginning to show itself as something awesome. There's only been grapes in Colorado for 50 years, and the wine industry has only existed for maybe 25 or 30. So that's super young in wine. That's like baby for wine. I tell people that my vines are 20 years old, and that's like the beginning of like, oh, maybe I'll take you seriously. So wine moves slow. Colorado wine industry is kind of beginning to have a moment. And where I am, I think Pinot Noir is going to put this thing on the map.
All right. Yeah, it's a 9-hour drive for me. I was looking because I like to visit Colorado time here and there. And with my toddler, driving seems easier than flying and doing all kinds of crap with all the necessary things he needs. So maybe I'll come visit you sometime.
Yeah, looking to figure out how to.
We need a babysitter, right? At the winery.
My west. Yeah, right. Well, give him a little glass of wine. He won't need babysitting.
Bitcoin conference or Noster meetup at Peony Lane Vineyard.
We'll figure something out. There's already been a Bitcoin conference in this area, so we'll see. Looking to do more events, just get more of my wine in Bitcoiner's hands and tasting it. And I just want to live my life talking to cool people. So yeah.
Take me higher. All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. We had some quirks at the front, but you know, we're so early. That's how we roll. I'll put Peony Lane Vineyards in the show notes. Anything else you want, just throw it in the comments, and I'll throw it in the show notes. But everyone that listened, everyone that endured live, we appreciate you. If you're going to listen to the recorded, please support Value for Value. Listen on Fountain. Give us a boost, comment, follow, whatever it is. Keep pumping the Value for Value culture, because rising tide lifts all boats. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Ben. Goodbye.